We're holding on Memzion and Bays. We're holding on Memzion and Bays, five lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday about the idea that Mishnah had said that the husband is chayiv in mezonos and in giving food for his wife. And we started talking about the idea whether that is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. We said, in particular, the chachamim made a takana that you have as a quid pro quo over there. He gives her mezonos, she gives him ma'aseh yadav. So the b'raisa we learned yesterday was kind of inconclusive. The b'raisa we learned yesterday was kind of inconclusive on the question of whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. All we said was there's this takana of this quid pro quo, but you could understand it either way. The actual mezonos are d'oraisa. The chachamim didn't want there to be eva, and therefore they said that he should be getting something in return, namely ma'aseh yadav. Or you could say the whole concept, both of mezonos and ma'aseh yadav, the whole thing is d'rabbanan. So now, Omar Rava, Hai Tana, the following Tana, Sava Mizonis Doraisa. The Tana of the following Braisa actually does hold that Mizonis are Doraisa. The Tanya, we learned that the Pasuk mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim, Sheiruk Susava Inasa Lo Yigra. The context is over there about an Omar Hevriya, who the master or his son wants to marry, that he shouldn't treat her any less than a regular wife. Don't think because she started out as an Omar Hevriya, therefore we have a right to withhold her rights. No, she has the same rights as any other wife, and the Pasuk says you have to be careful with Sheiruk Susava Inasa. What do those things mean? She'era elu mezonos, the Braisa says. She'era means you have to give her food. How do we see that the word she'er means food? They're talking about corrupt leaders of the people who ate the food of the people, like they ate the flesh off their bones. The pasuk continues in. So we see that she'er means food. Ksusa kamashmoi, the word ksusa means exactly what it sounds like, covering, meaning clothes. When it says that he has to be careful about Einasa, means the Einas. There's a certain minimum schedule, depending, we'll learn later on in the Samachs, around Pesach time. The Mishnah and the Gemara are going to talk about it, but there are different people who are doing different kinds of things, have different minimum schedules for the Einah. Once a day, once a week, etc., depending what kind of work they're doing.
Did we learn something before in Gemara?
We may have touched on it, but the main thing about it is going to be later. The main thing about it is going to be in the Samachs. Rashi quotes it on Pasuk in Parshas Vayishlach when it says over there that Yaakov sent to Esav 200 female goats and 20 male goats and Rechev Masayim Ve'elim, etc. You know, the whole different kinds of animals, there's different amounts of males and females. And Rashi quotes from the Medrash over there that relates that to this idea. Like, for example, goats and male goats and sheep don't really have anything to do except have relations with the female to reproduce, so therefore you don't need as many. Therefore you don't need as many males. Mashenkin, because they can be doing it all the time. Mashenkin, for example, camels go on very long trips. You go on the day, you go across the desert with them. Therefore you need as many males as females because they don't get a chance to reproduce as often, etc. So the point is you have the same kind of thing depending what kind of job the person has, how much he's away from home or whatever, or how busy or how tired or whatever he is. But the point is there is an oina, there is a minimum requirement that he has to satisfy his wife, and that's what we're saying. And the Braisa, that's what the Pasuk says, oina means that. And thus we see the Pasuk, Lavan says to Yaakov, speaking of Yaakov, this is right before that, at the end of Parshas Vayetze, Lavan says, Yak, we're making a peace treaty. In, among other things, im ta'ana et b'noisai, you're not to afflict my daughters. What would be the inui? Would be they have an owner. They have a certain minimum. You have a certain minimum requirement to satisfy them, to have relations with them. You make sure you don't diminish that.
Why was he suspecting that?
Because he's saying to Yaakov, basically, I want to make sure that you're going to treat my daughters right.
Big talk as
well. Yeah. Okay. Tosfos discusses over here that actually what it is that in a way it's kind of the opposite. Einasa lo yigra is sounding like you're saying a positive thing. You're calling the owner a positive thing. Don't diminish it. In ta'anet v'noisa is on the contrary. You're calling tashmish. You're calling a lack of tashmish in inui. So what is it? Does inui mean the tashmish or does it mean the lack of it? So Tosfos says, okay, what it means is einasa lo yigra means don't cause her an inui. Don't cause her something that'll feel bad by taking away tashmish. And there's actually the Rabbi Akiva Eiger refers over here to a drasha from drasha Taranach that talks about that in connection with when the pasuk says v'chasher ya'anu oisei, and we say in the Haggadah v'yaros onyenu zuprishus derecheres, that it relates to this idea also. That we see from that the idea of a lack of kashmish is related to this idea of inui. Okay. Rabbi Laza, that's opinion number one. Rabbi Laza Omer, it's the other way around. She'era is the Oina. The word She'era refers to the Oina. V'cheinu Omer, ish ish er kol She'er b'sarda le'sikru l'gala serva. The pasuk says, each person to their close relative, don't come close, to be megala er, to do gilei arayis. So we see that She'er is related to the idea of close contact. K'susa k'mashmoy, again, k'susa means a simple meaning, clothes. Einasa elu mezoinis, and einasa would mean food. And we see that inui is related to food, as we see. It says in the pasuk that the Eibishter made you suffer and made you hungry and then gave you the man. So we see that oina can be related to the idea of food. So basically, so far, both the Tanakhama and Rav Elazar agree that of what the three chiyuvim are, they're just arguing which one is meant by share and which one is meant by oina. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, She'erok Susa. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov learns it a little differently. He says, look, so what is it? The Torah is saying She'erok Susa. The Torah is putting Susa in the middle and putting She'era on one side and Einasa on the other. Therefore, we learn from that. He says, She'erok Susa. We learn from that. Lefum She'era ken Susa. According to her She'er, we just said before that She'er means the body. According to the condition of her body, ken Susa. Give her the appropriate kind of clothes. What does that mean? Shalit and Lalosha Yadda Luskena, Valosha Luskena Layalda. Don't give her clothes that are appropriate for a young woman if she's old, or vice versa. What's the point? Rashi says, and I confirm this with my wife, by the way, that young women usually like dresses that have a lot of frills and flounces and then decorative stuff and whatever, whereas older women, it's hard for them to schlep around that kind of stuff. They'd rather have plainer. They'd rather have plainer stuff. So make sure that you give her something that's appropriate to her age. Yeah. And when it says ksusa v'aynasa, when it says give her clothing and aynasa, means l'fum aynasa ten ksusa, means you also have to make sure the clothes are appropriate to the season. Don't give her new clothes in the summer or worn out clothes in the winter. In those days, the idea was, and we'll talk about it more in the Samach, the idea was the husband would buy his wife a new change of clothes, let's say for Yom Tov or whatever. She'd start wearing them in the winter. She'd start wearing them in the winter when they're newer, they're warmer. And then gradually over time, they wear out. The cloth gets thinner from repeated wearing and washing and whatever, and therefore it ends up being more appropriate for summer wear because it's thinner. So make sure you do that, the Pasuk saying.
Like it good.
So we'll talk about later on how often he has to get her, what's the minimum later he has to get her clothes. But whatever, the point is that the normal assumption is that the...
Can I tell this thing to my wife? Do I see your wife?
Because there is also, we're going to have soon, Ola Ima Ve'ena Yeredes, Ima, wait.
What's
Ola Ima Ve'ena Yeredes. So what's the vote over here? So Tosfos says, okay, so one second. So according to the way we're learning it, it sounds like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that only ksus is deraisa. It sounds like he's saying that the obligations of mezonos and of ona of tashmish are not necessarily deraisa, because he's taking the word she'er and ona and using them for those. All he's left with is ksusa. So Tosfos says not necessarily. Tosfos quotes from the continuation of the Braisa, which we don't have here, but it's in Sifra, in Chilta or whatever, that says that the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov actually learns the chiyuv of mezoinus and of tashmish by a kava chomer. If he's obligated to give her food, how much more so he's obligated to give her, to make sure that she has a fair amount of those things. Other mafarshim say not necessarily, though. You could indeed say, when we said before that this Braisa is saying that mezoinus, that the chiyuv of mezoinus is araisa, we would mean the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov might disagree with that and say that mezoinus are only dirabanan.
Why would he disagree with that?
Because he's learning that only ksusa is daraisa. She'era is teaching us the appropriate type of clothes relative to her age, and anasa is teaching us the appropriate type of clothes relative to the season. Also, Tani Rabbi Yosef taught further a braisa when it says she'era zukiru basar. This also, she'era also includes the idea of close flesh to flesh, of skin to skin contact. Don't act with her like the Persians do, who have relations while they're still wearing their clothes. The Gemara mentions in Brachas, actually, that I think it's Rebbe, says that there's three things I like about the Persians. One is that they're theistic, but we see over here there's kind of being too far in being theistic. Messiah le Ravuna, this supports what Ravuna says, the Amar Ravuna, ha'oyma e'efshi ela'ani b'vigdi b'hu b'vigdor. Ravuna says that if a husband says, the only way I want to have relations is I'll be wearing my clothes, she'll be wearing her clothes, no good. Yotzi v'yitzi d'ksuba. You can force him to divorce her and give her ksuba, because you can't, that's not a reasonable thing for him to be asking for. So she does. The Magen Avraham says, though, based on something from the Zohar, that if both of them are mutually agreeable, then it's okay. He says, and actually, it would be a theistic thing to do. Other Acharonim say not necessarily. Even that, the Zohar talks about that the Zohar has an expression that the Eibishter hates somebody that Mishamish Mitalsei Arum. But the Mishnah Berurah, I think, for example, explains that it doesn't mean literally. It doesn't mean that they're dressed like the Magen Avraham wants to say. It means that they have a blanket over them, and that's the proper way to do it. It should be kiruv baser. There shouldn't be any clothes, but you cover over on top of the blanket that's needed, and that's the proper way to do it. So therefore, you know, the famous old expression that they have about the hole in the sheet we see from the Gemara, that no such thing is allowed. Where did that come from, Bechlal? They say, you know, somebody, some guy saw tzitzit hanging on the line, and, you know, let his imagination run a little wild. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In a few places in Chassidus, by the way, it talks about the deeper idea of this, that the idea is also that it means the connection that in one place, for example, in Ora Torah, that the Machzedek talks about, the idea that it means that a person is supposed to be connecting themselves with the Eibishter, make sure it's not you and your own begodim, your own levushiv, and your own machshava dibra and maisa, make sure you divest yourselves of those and focus on the machshava dibra and maisa that are appropriate to the Eibishter, not your own. Another place in Chassidus, it also talks about the idea that the gili alikus that we want, and then especially that we look forward to lasid lavoi v'loy kanef oid meracha, that there's not going to be any beged hiding us from the Eibishter. It's not ani bevigdi v'hu bevigda. It's rather there's complete contact. Okay, then the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afilo Oni Shebiyisrael, Chola, that we said that the husband has an obligation to arrange for his wife's burial, and Rabbi Yehuda said that you have to have, at the very least, two flutes and a woman to give a hesped. So what does that mean? They're called Tanakhama Sava Haniloi. So what does that imply? The Tanakhama says that not. Hey Chidami, what's the case? Id Urcha, if it's the usual thing in her family that you have at least that, my time in the Tanakhama Dharmaloi, then why would the Tanakhama say that he doesn't have that obligation? The Ilabd Urcha, my time in the Rabbi Yehuda. And if it's not the usual thing in her family, then why would Rabbi Yehuda say you need it? The answer is loitzricha, going to urcha dide v'lav urcha dida. Fine, but let's say we're talking about that it's the usual thing in his family, but not in her family. So we're going to learn later on. The Gemara we're quoting it over here, and we're going to learn the marker for it later on, and on Daf Samach Aleph, that there's a concept oila ime veni yeredes imay. The wife goes up with her husband in status and doesn't come down with him. Which means, so Rashi gives an example of it over here. Let's say, for example, you have that, now in those days, when it came to a woman has a baby, the baby has to be nursed. They didn't have formula in those days. So, but there's two choices. Either the mother herself nurses, or she hires a wet nurse. Suppose that in her family usually they nurse their own babies, but in his family, he comes from a richer family, they're able to hire wet nurses. Well, then he has a responsibility to do that. He can't say, well, you know what, you come from a family where they all nurse, go ahead and do that. No, if she doesn't want to, then he has an obligation to hire a wet nurse.
And if she does want to?
If she does want to, give them to, hey, let her nurse.
He cannot say no.
We'll talk about that later on, actually. The Gemara brings up the possibility maybe he should be able to, but it says that no, she has a valid reason to say that I want to, because the milk bothers her or whatever, but yeah. But vice versa, how about if it's the other way around? In his family, they can't afford wet nurses, so the women nurse their babies. She comes from a rich family. Any yeredesima, she doesn't go down with him in status. He's still on the hook to make sure that she gets at least what she's used to back from her parents' house.
that apply to other things?
In general, it applies across the board. So that's the point of the machlokes over here.
If you can afford it.
If you can't afford it, okay. So if they mutually agree, okay, they can mutually agree. They can mutually agree on almost anything. Even the Sheikh Sus Vaina that we were just talking about, that I'm right. Oina, you can't make any deals about. Oina, you have an obligation, that's that. But share and ksus, fine. You know, you wanna make deals. You know, I'm not responsible to give you as much food as the Mishnah says later on that he's responsible to, or with clothes or whatever. You know, we want to make a deal. I'll only give you clothes every year and a half or whatever. Fine. You know, if they're mutually agreeable, take it because I'm to hey.
But those things come with family.
Yes. But that's going back to what you were saying before, by the way, about that. Can you convince your wife that you only need to get her clothes once a year? No, oila ima. Oila ima. No, you know, if you come from a family where the minhag is they buy clothes more often, then she's entitled to that. Yeah. Anyway, so what's the point? So here we're talking about again. The first, let's talk according to Rashi. That we're talking about over here, that in his family, the usual thing is they have at least the two flutes and the mekaneness. In her family, maybe not. So, Tanakama Sabra. So the Tanakama figure is like this. When we say this idea that we just said that she goes up with him in status but not down, that only applies when she's alive. After she's dead, then no. So then, if in her family there's no such minhag, then the Tanakhama says, fine, he's not on the hook for it. Where's Rabbi Yehuda Saba after the Lachamise? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda figures this Ola Imay applies after she dies as well. Therefore, since in his family the minhag is that they do the Shnei Chalulim Mekanenes, then therefore that's what he's obligated for. Tosfos asks a question, then. I mean, so why is Rabbi Huda specifically mentioning Shnei Chalulim Mekanenes, then? If the main point is that Rabbi Huda is saying whatever is usual in his family, he has to do for her, so why is he mentioning this specific thing, Shnei Chalulim Mekanenes? He should just say whatever is usual in his family is what he has to do for her.
That's
minimal, isn't it? Yes. So Tosfos gives the answer that it means, suppose we're talking about that you have when we say urcha didei v'lav urcha dida, not like Rashi says that we're talking about the respective husband and wife's families minhagim. We're talking about that in his family itself. Maybe there may be a minhag that they do the two flutes and the mekanenes for men, but not for women. But then so then we're saying over here that the Tanakhama that the Tanakhama is saying, well, therefore, fine, he doesn't have to. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying that no, the fact is once she's married into his family, then she has to be at least on his level. Given that he gets Shnei Chalulim Kananis because that's his family's minhag, then she has to as well.
So for some things he has to do like her family, and for some things she has to do like.
So we're saying as far as social status, as far as things, yeah, then she gets to have at least what he has, or what she has, whichever is better, basically. And what Taka happens if he can't. And what happens if he can't afford it, Taka? Well, then, so either, like I said a minute ago, they can mutually agree, or if they don't agree, then many Rishonim say that in that case, fine, Yosef Yitzhak Ksuba, Beitin can force him to divorce her if she doesn't want to put up with that. They can force him to give a get. As far as Ksuba, okay, if he can pay it now, good, and if not, then he'll have to owe it like he owes anything else.
A big demonstration today,
but yeah, we know. Yeah.
Can they be enforced?
Yeah. So it's a little complicated, and we'll learn much more about it in Gittin. There are cases where Beis Din can force a person to give, when can force a husband to give a get. There's many cases when not, though. The Rambam actually writes that if a woman b'chalal says, if she says, I can't live with this guy anymore, I can't have relations with him, I can't stand him, then the Rambam says that, yeah, they can force him to divorce her. She's not a slave. She doesn't have to stay with a husband that she hates. All the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that, though, and in fact, the halacha is not like the Rambam in that regard. So there are certain cases where a husband can be forced to divorce his wife, but other than that, no, it's something that they have to either work out together or basically they have to work out between them. Yeah. But that really that's not a topic for here. We'll get to that other times. Yeah. All right. There was another, besides this answer of Tosfos, by the way, about this, there was an answer also that Shita Mekubetzes brings from Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah, but now I've forgotten what it is. So if any of you all know it, say it, but if not, then I guess we'll skip it. So we're talking, let's say, they say that you have the wife's family, they usually don't do a hesped at all. She marries into a family where they do. So the husband's family doesn't have any specific minhag, maybe, but the absolute minimum is shnei chalulim kenenes, and therefore that's all you can make him responsible for. Okay. Amar of chista amar ma'ukba halacha kerav Yehuda. So he has to do at least the shnei chalulim kenenes. A related thing, since we said one thing that Rav Chista said in the name of Ma'ukva, so here's another one in the halachas of marriage. Mishin ishtata, somebody who went crazy, so he can't support his family anymore. Based in Yodin Lachasov, so based in goes into his property. Vizanunum fanasenas ishtay ubanum of noisa vidava acher. They go and they sell or manage whatever the property in such a way as to provide food for his wife. Food and clothes and whatever for his wife and his children and Vidava Acher as well as something else, which was the something else we'll get to in a few lines. No. Why is that case different than a case that it teaches about in a Braisa, which we'll have later on the Masechta? Misha Holoch L'Medinas Hayam, somebody who went overseas, the Ishtei Tevas Mezonis, and his wife says, I need food, I need money for the household expenses. Based in Yodin L'Nechasov, so again, based in can go into his Nechasim, V'zonin U'mefarnasin es Ishtoi, they can go and give her support, Avaloi Bonu of Noisa, Avaloi Dava Acher, but not the children and not anything else. Because the difference is that the point is that to support her is part of the Tanoi Ksuba. We discussed just now whether it's Doraisa or Dirabonin, but either way, he has an absolute obligation. The children, not necessarily, as we've talked about in the last couple of days, and we'll have much more about tomorrow. Technically, the father doesn't have an obligation to support the children above age 6.
Well, I thought that's the girls.
No, the boys. We'll talk about tomorrow the details, the boys, the girls, whatever. But it's not an absolute obligation. So basically, can't take that away from him, and certainly not the Dover Acha, whatever that is. We'll get to in a minute. Where's the support of the wife? That's like so, but he has an absolute obligation. So what's the difference? Why are you saying that by Medina Sayam you're not dealing with the children or the Dover Acher, whereas if he went crazy, you're saying that you do. Amalei, so v'lo shani loch ben yotzul adas v'yotzul shalay adas. Don't you think there's a difference between whether he left willingly versus not? If he left willingly, he should have made sure to make arrangements that there'll be sustenance available for his children and so forth. If he didn't, it means he's saying in effect, I don't want to be bothered.
And if he left willingly and he thought he was coming back and he was taken away by
no, but the fact that he left, even if he left willingly, I mean what? He may have left on a trip for a couple of days, but even for a couple of days his kids need to eat. So he should have made arrangements.
He made arrangements for a couple of days.
No, but so if he made arrangements, that's different. We're not talking about that. We're talking about that he didn't make any arrangements at all. So therefore, we can't assume that he wanted to. So again, his wife, he doesn't have a choice in the matter. So even if he didn't make arrangements, we have to do it on his behalf. But for things that he has a choice, we have to kind of respect his unexpressed wishes. Whereas with Neshtata, it's not like he didn't have a choice in the matter. He didn't voluntarily go crazy. So therefore, we shouldn't assume that he would have wanted his children to be sustained. Which, you know, Tosis points out the obvious thing then. I mean, if beforehand he wasn't sustaining his children, we're going to learn tomorrow the whole concept that, Basin can put pressure on him, social pressure, to support them, but after all, he doesn't technically have a chiyuv to. If he hasn't been before, then sure, if he goes crazy, you can't all of a sudden assume that now he'd want to. Maybe now you might think he's normal in that regard, but no, you can't do that. My Dover Acha, what's this Dover Acha that we're saying? Rav Chista Amaz Atachshit. Rav Chista says this refers to perfume for the wife. Rav Yosef Amaz Tzedakah. They're collecting. They're always collecting tzedakah for people in the community. So they assess everybody a certain amount that they should be have to pay based on their known income and whatever. So they can.
That's based in.
Based in, yeah.
And they come and they can force you to give tzedakah.
Yeah. We'll have a case of that tomorrow. Actually, where the Gemara describes that Rava one time forced one of the other Amiroyim, I don't remember now the name, to give a large amount for tzedakah. Yeah. So Mando Matachshit, the opinion that says Rav Chisda, who says that the Javar Acha means perfume, Kol Shekin Tzedakah, he would say all the more so then that you can take Tzedakah from him. Mando Matzedakah, whereas Rav Yosef, who says that it means Tzedakah Aval Tachshit Yavinin La, but he would say that no, the other way around. Sorry, when we say over here, when we said over here that if he went to Medina Sayam, that Beis Din does not assess him for Javar Acha. They can take money out of his bank account to feed his wife, but not for the Davar Acher. So according to, if we say that it means that you don't take out money for her perfumes, how much more so you don't take out for tzedakah? He not only because he didn't say before he wanted to go that he wants to give, but also the Ritva points out because, okay, he's overseas, probably giving tzedakah over there. You shouldn't assume that he has to give tzedakah over here. He may very well be giving tzedakah over there. Manda amat tzedakah, where the opinion of Rav Yosef, who says that the davar acha means tzedakah, aval tachshit yavinin lo. He would say that no, in the case even the guy went to Medina Sayam, you still continue to give his wife money for perfume. Because we do assume that this husband still doesn't want his wife to be unattractive. Then Rashi brings another girsa on this last piece over here. We're assuming, according to the girsa that we just said, we're saying that this difference between this discussion about tachshit and tzedakah is referring to the second case, the Medina Sayam case. Rashi brings another girsa that actually it's referring back to the original case, the case where he went crazy, nishtata. What? And then it would be the other way around. that if we say that we do take money for tzedakah, how much more so we take away for tachshit? But if we say we take away money, we take money out of his account for tachshit, not necessarily would we for tzedakah. Because we might say tachshit, even though he's crazy, still before he went crazy, he wouldn't have wanted his wife to be unattractive. Whereas now we can't make any assumptions what he'd want to do as far as tzedakah.
She needs herself now.
Yeah. Okay. No, she doesn't need tzedakah. She gets supported out of his bank account.
That's
nice. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Okay.
That's
enough
money. Really crazy.
Okay.
So he's crazy.
He's
money. That's what
he's not heard.
Other
way around. Yeah, we're talking for the odds. Yeah. Amr of Chiyuba of an Amr of Huna, Misha Halach LeMedina Sayam, somebody who went overseas, Umesa Ishta, and while he was overseas, his wife died. Based in Yodin and Chosav, and based in goes into his property, they take out from his bank account, and they go and bury him according to what's appropriate to his honor, to his social position. What? Lefi Kvoidei. The question is, what do you mean?
Mekovin
Oysa Lefi Kvoidei, according to the standards that his
family.
So what do you mean? Yeah. Lefi Kvoidei below Lefi Kvoidei. What about her covenant? Again, we said before Ola Imoy Ola Imoy Veni Yodadisimoy. Yeah, if she's higher, if she started out from a higher family, Eni Yodadis, she doesn't go down. And okay, we said before that there's machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Huda whether that applies to Achamisa, but for sure she doesn't go down. She doesn't get downgraded to Kvoda. Maybe all it means is we don't make her the same as yeah. But yeah. The answer is Ema. It means that we look at both. We look at her station and we also look at his. Hakamash Malan, the chiddush is that we're saying that we do apply this for any yeredesima even after she's dead. Which is what, like we said before, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, so this fits with that. Amar of Masna, ha'omer im meisa loitzik biruam nechasev. Suppose that the husband says when he's on his deathbed. He says, "If my wife, when my wife dies, don't use my nechassim to bury her." Shimon, like, then we listen to him. Why? Because what's going to happen? He's dying. She's going to be able to collect her ksuba. Eventually, then, when she dies, her yoshim are going to be yarshining the ksuba, not his yoshim. Which obviously, if this was each of their only marriage, then her yoshim are his yoshim. But it could be, she may have been married before, she may remarry, etc. So not necessarily the same yoshim. Well, if they're Yahshua, we said before that the Ksuba and the Beriel go together because the husband has the right to Yarshin his wife Ksuba, therefore he's on the hook to bury her. Here, where it's the other way around. He's dying first, so therefore she collects the Ksuba and she's going to wind up, it's going to end up going to her heirs, then they're the ones responsible to bury her. So if he's saying, don't take out of my estate to bury her, have whoever Yarshin's from her should be the one on the hook. Shimon, like, we listen to him. The Gemara says, what? The Maishna ki Omar. So what are you saying only if he said that? The Nasi Nichsi Kama Yasmi, which then was, you're saying, why would you listen to him? Why would you say, you know what, he has a valid point? Because her Yoshim are Yashin and Hoksuba, so therefore they should be the ones responsible to bury her. Fine, what does he need to say that? Ki Loi Omar Nami, if he didn't say it also. Nichsi Kama Yasmi Ramu. The Nechasim are going to the orphans, are going to the Yasomim, the same way, either way. So what is the difference, whether he says to do that or not? Either way, yes, the obvious thing is that they're the ones responsible for paying the funeral expenses. Ella, no. What we really mean is, ha'omer imeshu loitikvurum nechasav ein shayman loy. If he were to say on his deathbed that when I die, don't bury me out of my nechasim, don't use my nechasim for the funeral expenses, ein shayman loy, then we don't pay any attention to what he says. Which the Ritva says, it's not like we're not changing the wording of what Rav Masna said. We're saying Rav Masna talked about what happens if he says about his wife's burial in the future. From that we can deduce that if he talks about his own burial, then we don't pay any attention. We don't listen to him. Why? Lav kol emenu, because we can't accept from him sheyashir es banav, that he wants to make his children richer, v'yapalat smal tzibur, and he'll put himself on the tzibur that they'll have to be on the hook for the funeral expenses. You can't. There is a mitzvah to bury him. He can't leave himself unburied. Right. So therefore he doesn't have the option to say that it should have to come out of the tzibur's money instead of his own.
If there's no more than the burial amount,
but the same thing. I mean, they still are on the hook.
If there's more than the burial amount,
good. Then they pay the burial expenses and they yarshin the rest. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Mishnah says. Continuing on this topic from the last couple of Mishnayos about when the woman, or first girl, then woman, is in her father's reshus and when not. The basic idea we established before is that as long as she's a ketana or a naira, she's in her father's reshus. And then eventually, when she becomes a begeris, or when she gets married, then she leaves her father's reshus. And when she's a begeris, if she's not married yet, she's in her own reshus. And then afterwards, she's in her husband's reshus. The Mishnah says, La'olam hi b'rishus ha'av, she's always in the rishus of the father, which includes, Rashi says, for example, that if she's a bat Yisrael and she's engaged to a kohen, she can't eat truma yet. Ad shetikonis l'rishus ha'ba'al l'nisuin, until she enters the custody of the husband for marriage. Meaning, basically, she goes into the chuppah. And in fact, Tosfos says over here that the girsa should not really be here. Chuppah and Nisuin are pretty much the same thing. Chuppah l'shem Nisuin. But actually what we're going to be talking about in the Gemara is that not necessarily do you need chuppah, according to any of its various definitions, in order to constitute Nisuin. We're going to talk about in the Gemara the concept of, actually we're going to talk about in the rest of the Mishnah, the concept of shluchei ha'av and shluchei ha'baal. Not always would you have. I mean, you know, nowadays we're used to that. You know, you go to a wedding. The kala's, you know, the chassan's parents and the kala's parents are interferers, and then the chassan and kala stand together, and you do the erusin and you do the nisuin. In those times, not necessarily was it always everybody is there in the same place. Travel wasn't always so easy. Sometimes the father sends shluchim along with the daughter. To escort her to the chassan's house, and the chassan himself may not be able to make it to the place to meet them, so he sends out shluchim of his own to bring her to bring her to his house. That transfer from one set of shluchim to the other can also constitute nisuin. That's what we're going to talk about. So in fact, Tosfos says when we say the girsa over here that we have ad shetikonis l'rishus ha'baal l'nisuin, Tosfos says I don't like that girsa. Based on the Gemara further, the proper girsa should be ad shetikonis l'chuppah.
Right.
Yes. But we're going to establish though that chuppah and nisuin are the same thing, and then handing over to shluchim is a form of chuppah as well. Basically.
So why does the Mishnah use the word nisuin?
L'nisuin, for the purpose of nisuin.
Ultimately.
Yeah. So Masa av l'shluchei abal. So if the father gives the daughter over to the shluchim of the husband, harei b'rishus abal. At that point, she's in the rishus of the husband. Which means, for example, about, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara, what that means exactly. Does it mean she can eat truma at that point? Does it mean that if she dies at that point, her new husband yarshins her, etc.? Halacha avim shluchei abal. What if the father went together with the shluchim of the husband? Or shahalchu shluchei avim shluchei abal, or the shluchim of the father went together with the shluchim of the husband. Harei b'rishus av, then she's still considered in the rishus of the father. As long as the father or his shluchim are still on the spot over there, are still present, then she's still partly in their rishus. Once the shluchei av hand over to shluchei abal, harei b'rishus abal, then she's in the husband's rishus. Which I saw, by the way, a vert on this, that this is... When we invite the malachim on Friday night, when we say shalom aleichem, why are we saying at the end seis kam l'shalom? What are we in such a hurry to send them off? And in fact, there are other sorrows that leave off seis kam l'shalom for that reason. Or they say bit seis kam b'shalom, like not, you have to leave right now, but when you leave, it should be b'shalom. But
we say
seis kam l'shalom.
Yeah,
seis kam l'shalom. Like get out of here. No, we don't say it quietly.
So the malachim,
the true malachim, yeah. Yeah. Well, the true malachim, yeah. So I saw her. The good malach and the bad malach, whatever. But why are we in such a hurry? Yeah, the famous thing that the good malach sees that the house is nicely set up for Shabbos, and he says it should be like this for next week. And the malach rabba al kochay on amen. So, but why are we in such a hurry to send them off? So I saw a vote, it's related to what we're saying here in the Mishnah. Given that we're having, the Malachim are coming and escorting Shabbos HaMalka into our house, the Kala, Bari Kala, Shabbos Malkasa, we don't want Shluchei Av to be there anymore, then she's still partly in the Rishus. Get out of here, let us be alone with the Kala.
Yeah.
On Shabbos, yeah, with Shabbos. So the Mishnah says, "My la'olam." When the Mishnah starts off, "La'olam he birshus av." What's the la'olam adding? The answer is like Pukim and Mishnah Rishona. It comes to tell us not like the Mishnah Rishona, which we will learn. We talked about briefly at the beginning of the Masechta, and we'll have the actual Mishnah itself will be in the next parak. It's not. He gears man v'leinis. La'olam he birshus av. Yeah. So what's the la'olam? So in the next parak, it talks about like this. Midah Raisa, once a Kohen was Mekadesh a woman, she can eat Truma. Midrabanan, we don't want her to right then and there for reasons that we've talked about before and for reasons that we'll talk about in the next parak, because two basic reasons that the Gemara discusses are, one, because it may turn out there's a simpoin, meaning like an objection to the marriage. It finds a mumin of her, for example, and so the marriage never ends up taking place, and then it'll turn out that she was a Zara and eating Truma. And the other reason is because she's still living at home and she may give some of the Truma to her family. And then there's Zorim, they're not allowed to. Yeah. No, whatever, both of them. We'll talk about in the next parak. Anyway, so Midrabanan, she has to wait until later on. Now, we said that usually, the Mishnah says over there, that when a Bsula gets engaged, she has 12 months to prepare for the wedding. We find by Rivka also that Lavan and their mother say to Eliezer, what's your hurry to go? Teshav anari tanu yomi may also, let her stay with us, yomi meaning a year, also at least 10 months.
It's very expensive.
And Eliezer, what do you mean it's very expensive?
Stop shopping and buying to the whole family.
Yeah. Okay. And then Eliezer says, I can't, we got to get going. But anyway, we see the normal thing was that you had 12 months. So what happens, we learned this at the beginning of the Masechta, if the 12 months are up, it's time for the wedding, and he's delaying it for whatever reason, or even we talk about maybe it's not his fault, maybe he's sick or whatever, but the delay is coming from his side. So then, the Mishnah Rishona said in that case, then she's entitled to eat Truma at that point, if her husband-to-be, her fiancé, is a Kohen. That was the Mishnah Rishona. Then we said, the Mishnah Achrona says that no, only when she actually goes into the chuppah. By our Mishnah, saying La'olam is La'apukim in Mishnah Rishonah, to tell us that the halacha is not like that Mishnah Rishonah. That's not on that Mishnah that it says, Yigiyaz man v'lenisu ochlis v'shaloi v'ochlis v'truma, that at that point she's entitled to be supported by her new husband, and she's entitled to eat truma. Kamach malam La'olam. No, therefore our Mishnah says La'olam, as long as the actual nisuin has not taken place, then she can't eat truma.
Then she can.
No, once the nisuin takes place, then she can.
Until then, she can't.
Even though there was a delay, even though he's delaying the wedding for whatever reason, nevertheless, Mishnah Achrona is that she doesn't get to eat Truma yet.
No.
Tosfos points out that, I mean, we don't really need the implication of our Mishnah. The Mishnah there in the next parak says this explicitly, that Baha'u is not like the Mishnah Achrona. But okay, it's a common thing for the Mishnah to reinforce this thing in various places. Then the Mishnah said, "Moser ab l'shluchei abal," that if the husband has, if the father has handed over the girl, the kala, to the shluchim of the husband, harei b'rishus abal b'chol, then at that point she's in the rishus of the husband. So as far as what? Amarav, misirasa lakor, that means that she's handed over for all purposes, chutz mitruma, except that she still can't eat truma yet, until the actual chuppah. V'ravasi, yoma achla truma, whereas Ravasi says, no, she can even eat truma at that point. Once she's with the shluchei abal and the shluchei ava, and the father and the shluchei ava out of the picture, then yes. Eisver of hona l'ravasi, v'ami l'chiyah barav l'ravasi. Our Mishnah says, l'olim hibir shosa ava shetekonis l'chuppah. So what do you mean? It has to be she goes into the chuppah. Amalahu Rav, so Rav says to them, what do you think that's a question? Lava minalahu, haven't I told you before, l'kezlu basa ipcha, you shouldn't go looking for questions from the Shnayas or Braises that can easily be turned around, ipcha can be turned around to be understood in different ways. In other words, Ravasi could have a very simple answer. He could answer you, misirasa, zuiknisasa l'chuppah. The handing over to the shluchei abal, that itself constitutes l'chuppah. So yes, adjtikonis l'chuppah. She can't eat. She's still in the Rosh Hashanah, and therefore she can't eat truma. But once she's given over to the Shluchei Baal, that's the equivalent of Mesirul. Of that's the equivalent of Chuppah. No, Mekudeshet. She was a year ago. Now she's in the Nesua. Now she's in the Nesua. Yeah. Okay, so those are two opinions. Shmuel Amel.
So what's the conclusion of that?
So far we don't have a conclusion yet. We're gonna at least we can't contradict Rav Ashi. We can't contradict Rav Asi rather based on our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah could be understood either way. You could understand it to say that only when there's chuppah does she actually become fully in the husband's rishus, real chuppah, however we define that. Or according to Rav Asi, it could even be shluchei abal. Yeah. More opinions on that. Or Shmuel Amal Yerushasa. Shmuel says that it means that once she's given over to the Shluchei Abal, then at that point he's considered her husband as far as inheriting from her. That he inherits her Nadin. We talked about yesterday the Machloikas of whether the husband inherits the Nadin. We talked about Rabbeinu Tam Takana. By the way, I did find that story that you all were talking about. Yes. Yes. So the details of the story are basically that there was a gvir from Poland who a shidduch was made between his daughter and a bachur from Egypt. How they got from Poland to Egypt, basically, but whatever. So maybe that's what the bachur learned in Poland. Maybe that's what it was. Whatever it was, anyway. So they went to Egypt. They had a very nice wedding. The father, being a gvir, gave a nice nadin, and right after the sheva berachos, the kala passed away. So. Based on the takana of Rabbeinu Tam, the Nadin was the gvir, the kala's father, was demanding back the Nadin. That's the takana. And he got the Maharshal wrote a tshuva about it, for example, whereas the Rabbanim of Egypt, like the Radvaz and others, said very nice to Rabbeinu Tam. We're Sardim. We don't hold like Rabbeinu Tam. We don't have to hold like that takana. So it went back and forth, and until somebody told them you should go talk to the Arizal. The Arizal grew up here in Egypt, but by birth and upbringing, he's an Ashkenazi. So he can... Is that what it was? Whatever. But I mean, his full name, Rabbi Yitzchok Luria Ashkenazi. Yeah, he considered himself an Ashkenazi, yeah. So he lives in Tzfas now, go ask him. Kitzur, they go to Tzfas, they ask the Arizal. The Arizal says that you should leave the Nadin where it is, with the Chafin. Talking about what happened to Rabbeinu Tam's Takana. So he explains to them that many years ago there were two merchants who were traveling together. One of them got it, one of them's money was stolen, so he borrowed money from the other one, and then they ended up each going their own way and forgot about the loan, so he never paid it back. It had to be arranged, Min HaShemayim, that the money you'll get back. So therefore these two were sent back down as the Chassan and Kala, as the Gilgal, in order for this case to happen, in order that the money will go to where it belongs.
But you heard that story about it.
I've never heard that story before, actually, but I looked it up last night. Yachmiel Tillis has it on his website. But
the Talmidim, not
his guy,
about the Gilgal.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, okay. Is that what it is? And that he told the Talmidim about the Gilgal. Okay. And the version that I was reading from Yachmiel Tillis adds that the Arizal told his Talmidim that this is why we find there's three different explanations when it says Ve'eva Mishpatim Ashtasim Lekneim. Tagum Unkelus translates Mishpatim as Dinim. In Pasach Aliyah we say Mishpat Di'ir Rachmi, that Mishpat is Rachmim, and the Zayar says on the Pasach that Ve'eva Mishpatim Ashtasim Lekneim is the side of Gilgal. So all three of these things came together over here, the Din, the Rachamim, and the Gilgul, in order that everything should get worked out the way it's supposed to. Anyway, so Shmuel is saying that when we say that he's considered her husband after the Mesir or the Shluchei Abal, we mean as far as Yarshining her. Rish Lakish looks, and Tosfos discusses over here, does he mean only Yerusha, or does he maybe mean other things as well? Rish Lakish Amal Ksubasa. Rish Lakish says as far as a Ksuba. Well, then the question is, Ksubasa Maihi, what do you mean the Ksuba? Di Mesa Yoritz Law, that if she dies, at that point he Yarshins her, Hainer to Shmuel. Well, then he's saying exactly the same thing as Shmuel. Amar Ravina, no. It means, Ravina says, what Rish Lakish is saying is, in what sense is she considered fully married at this point, that if at this point her husband were, not her, if her husband at this point were to die or divorce her, and she got remarried, she would only be entitled to a ksuba of a mana. Even though she's still a basula physically, because they haven't had relations yet, obviously, nevertheless, the Ritva points out, at this point she doesn't have the chen. Like, people don't look at her as a basula, as like somebody who's never been married before. People already look at her as a married woman, and therefore she gets downgraded to a mana.
Why just mana? I mean, she could have 100...
No, mana meaning 100 zuz. 100 zuz is the minimum ksuba for a non-basula.
One mana.
Yeah, one mana is 100 zuz, yeah. Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Chanina Damri, Damri Chavayu, they both say Misiros Alakol Afla Truma. They say they say similar to Ravasi before, that when we say that she's given over to the Shluchei Abal, means as far as everything, even as far as eating Truma. Maybe the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to many of these, to many, or maybe even all, of these Mandamas. But Isa says, Halacha Avim Shluchei Abal, if the father goes together with the Shluchim of the husband, or the shluchim and the father are going together with the shluchim of the husband, or she has a chotzer someplace on the way, and she goes in even with her new husband to go and spend the night there. They're not going in there l'shem nisuin. They're not going in there for yichud. They're just going in because they need a place to spend the night. So they're going to be in separate bedrooms with their respective entourages or whatever. Even if at that point her ksuba, meaning her nadin, is in her husband's house already, so the nadin has already been delivered from her father's house to her husband's house, mesa, nevertheless, if she dies at that point, avio yosha, her father still yarshins, he gets back the nadin. Masa av the shluchei abal, on the other hand, if the father gave her over to the shluchei abal, osha masu shluchei av the shluchei abal, or the shluchim of the father gave her over to the shluchim of the husband, and again, they're out of the picture, so now we're saying she's in the husband's rishus, we said in the Mishnah, osha haisa lachotza baderach benichnaseim l'shum nisuin, or he has a chotza on the way, and she went in there with him for the sake of nisuin, meaning for yichud. Then it's the other way around. Even though the ksuba, meaning the nadin, is still in her father's house, it hasn't been delivered yet. Mesa b'ila yosha. If she dies at that point, then the husband yarshins her. Lamed v'mamurim. When is all this talking about? L'yurushasa, as far as yarshining her. Aval l'truma. But when it comes to truma, ein isha echelus v'truma ashe tekarnes v'chupa. She cannot eat truma until she actually goes into the chupa.
Language doesn't.
Well, so pure up to the kulu. So this is a contradiction to many of the opinions that we just said before. Kulu literally means all of them. So some rishonim, including Rabbi Nachman, says that actually this braisa is meant to be a contradiction to all of the opinions that we just mentioned. Even Shmuel, who said that they're only considered married as far as the Yerusha, but nevertheless the braisa is adding the extra detail that it has to actually be that they went into this chaser, the shem nisuin. That they went into this chotzer l'shem nisuin, but without that, even he wouldn't even yarshin her. So according to Rabbi Chanan, it's a question even on Shmuel. According to Tosfos, the question is not on Shmuel because okay, we can say that Braita doesn't mean they have to have gone into the chotzer l'shem nisuin. It can include also the case where he handed her over to Shluchei Abal, but it would be a contradiction to all the other opinions that she gets to eat truma, that he gets to cancel her nedarim. When Rav said chutz mitruma, it includes the idea that the husband at this point can unilaterally cancel her nedarim, not together with the father. From this braisa, it comes out that not. From this braisa, it comes out that until she's actually nichnas lechupa, there's no hafaras nedarim on his own. There's no eating truma, etc. Tupta, okay, it's a contradiction. So the Gemara says hal gufa kasha. Now we have a contradiction in the braisa. Amrit nichnasa imel lolin. You have the first case where she has a chotzer and they went in just to spend the night, which implies timer de lolin. Why are we saying she's not considered married yet, even as far as Yerusha? Is because they only went in there to spend the night.
We said they spent it in separate.
Yeah, but the point is ha stoma. But if they went in not deciding whether they're just spending the night. The truth is actually what I said about separate bedrooms may not really be correct, because we're saying over here that there can be a stam, where they go in not specifically for yichud, but without any specific intent, basically. They just go, and they've been traveling for 16 hours, they're tired, they just, you know, they go in and fall asleep on a couple of beds over there, you know, without paying attention to who, you know, to who's in what room, basically.
That can be considered.
Well, that's stama. Hostama l'shem nisuin, which would imply that if they went in stam without any particular intention, then that would be l'shem nisuin.
If it's stam, by definition, it cannot be l'shem nisuin. How can you stam
it? No, because that's the implication. If they went in lolin, then we're saying that there's nothing. But if they went in stam, and there may have been yichud, they just didn't have...
Yichud is different.
Okay, but they didn't specifically mean it, l'shem nisuin. But Ema Sefer, but look at the second part, Nichnas Ema L'Shem Nisuin, the case where he had a chaser, and they went in only L'Shem Nisuin, Hostam Alolin, which implies if they just went in Stam without any specific intention, we assume it's just to spend the night. So what is it? What happens if they just go in Stam? Is it considered L'Shem Nisuin or is it considered Lolin? Amar Ravashi, Stami Katani. The Braise is talking about two different kinds of cases. It's talking about what's the Stam in each case. Stam chotzer didar lalin, we assume if the chotzer belongs to her, then we assume the reason they went in there is not for the sake of nisuin, because nisuin usually takes place in the chotzer's property.
Wow.
Therefore, therefore even stam is just considered lalin. Unless they specifically went in there l'shem nisuin, then there's no nisuin. Stam chotzer didar l'nisuin, whereas if it's his chotzer, unspecified, then we assume it's nisuin, again, unless they specifically said lalin. What happens if the chotzer belongs to both of them? Then we say for sure it's nisuin. Tana, we learn further in a Braisa, more on the topic of Shluchei Av and Shluchei Baal. Masa Av l'Shluchei Baal, if the father gave over the Kala to the Shluchim of the husband, the Zinsa, and then at that point, sometime between then and the Chuppah, she was Mizana, Harez B'chenet. Then instead of getting Skila, like a Naira HaMairosa, she gets downgraded to Chenet. Menani Mili, how do we know that? Amar Rav Ami Bachama, Amar Kro, because the Pasuk says, when does she get Skila? Liznais Beis Avia, if she was Mizana, in her father's house. Prat L'Shmasa Ab L'Shluchei Abal, as opposed to when he handed her over to the Shluchei Abal, even though it's before the Chuppah, but she's out of the Rishos of the father. Igmar says, why? The aim of Prat Shenichnas al Chuppah B'lein Nivala. Why? Say that the Pasuk Liznais Beis Avia is not excluding the case where she's out of the father's Rishos, it's only excluding the case after Chuppah, but before Be'ila. And chuppah doesn't necessarily mean be'ilah itself. Chuppah, we talked about whether it means yichud, or what we call the chuppah, or whatever, but either way, be'ilah hasn't happened.
Does it change?
Yeah. Amar Rava, Amar Li Am.
She
is an Eish. No, of course, she was an Eish from the Kedushin.
Exactly.
Yeah. But so why don't we say that when the Pasuk is downgrading her from Skila to Chenek, is after the chuppah? Up until the chuppah, maybe, we would say that she's Chayav Skila. Why are you saying that once Shluchei Abal are involved, then already it's downgraded to Chenek? Amar Rava, Amar Li Ami, the name of an Amora, told me, Chuppah Behed Yiksiva, because we don't need that. For Chuppah, we have an explicit pasuk that says that once she's gone into the Chuppah, she doesn't get Skila anymore. The pasuk says, Ki Yiyah Nairab Thuloma Irasal Ish, and each of those words is significant. Naira teaches us v'loy begeres, that if she was a begeres, she wouldn't get skila. B'sula means v'loy be'ula, that she didn't have relations. Ma'irasa v'loy nesua, and when it says ma'irasa, means that she's only a ma'irasa, it's not a nesua. Now, my nesua, now we have to ask, what does nesua mean? Ilei b'nesua mamish, does it mean that there was actually already chuppah and be'ila? Well, then hainu b'sula v'loy be'ula, well, then that's already included in b'sula v'loy be'ula. Obviously, then, when we're saying ma'irasa v'lo nisua, it's talking about meaning that even if she went into the chuppah, but there was no be'ila yet, she's still already considered nisua. She's not considered a nisua, a ma'irasa anymore. She's not considered an arusa. She's considered a nisua, even though physically she's still a basula. And at that point already, she's downgraded to chenek. So once we have the pasuk implying that, then we can say that other pasuk lizneis beis aviyah is adding that even before chuppah, even once you have shluchei abal without shluchei av, then already also she's enough of the nisuin has taken place that at that point that at that point she's downgraded to chenek. And that's the machshana of that part. The next part of the Gemara is sort of a segue to a new topic.
Yeah.